I mix what I like. Second Childhood Production is for the Killer Bees podcast, and I mix what I like. .org.
We're here with Brother Jamil Muhammad, who obviously for the purposes of this discussion has to be known as my brother. And we wanted to talk a little bit about the recent revelations for our family regarding some research that was sent to us from folks doing some studies on Cincinnati, Ohio's chapters of CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, and SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, where our father was a leading figure and founder. And we got some documents that show us the extent to which, or at least to a certain extent, the extent to which the federal government was going to put under surveillance these black people looking to develop some revolutionary change in this country and around the world. So good morning, Brother Jamil Muhammad, and welcome to the program, and thanks for coming on with us.
Good morning, Brother Jared, and I have to say, for the purposes of this discussion, our great host, Dr. Jared Ball, and I thank you for having me on. This is a really interesting subject and an approach that I really think this discussion will help families understand the extent to which these people are willing to go to stop you from making any change that would develop you and your people. So it's a great time to be on your program. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So what? Let's talk about what we've seen here. I had, you know, obviously we both know that our father was a highly active member of the human rights struggle in this country, and later on the labor movement in this country. And these documents detail a time in his work, not just him, but the work of those trying to develop SNCC and CORE, including our godfather, Mr. Tom Porter. And the two of them were seen as leading figures in the move from the Friends of SNCC and from CORE to the Friends of SNCC and then into SNCC itself. And these cover the years of roughly, I think it was 1967 to 1968, really just that one year, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, sir. I think there may have been some scant references to events that took place in 65 and 66, but the meat mm-hmm. of what they detail and chronicle in those reports does take place in those years, 67 and up to March of 68. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Now, you know, obviously I don't come into the picture till later when he makes the move to D.C., so maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you remember or what you know about the context here, Cincinnati, Ohio, and, these organizations are developing, and then some of the work that is discussed here, thanks to the FBI for their documentation of our father's work.
it's funny, but they actually were meticulous enough in mm-hmm. their intrusive, sneaky, spying, low down, scurrilous way. They were thorough enough to give dates and places, times, which when I read these documents began to crystallize memories in my mind that had been foggy. Mm. For example, when you talk about the various different aspects or events concerning the visit of our brother Imam Jamil El-Amin, then known as H. Rap Brown, to the city of Lincoln Heights, which is a landlocked municipality surrounded by the city of Cincinnati and Hamilton County in the northern part of the county. It's a black city, the city that produced Nikki Giovanni and the Isley Brothers. It's a black town, Lincoln Heights, Ohio. But H. Rap Brown, our brother, was coming there to speak, and there was a great division in the Lincoln Heights community about whether he should be there. Many people saying, yes, let's hear from the brother. Others who are afraid that his presence may earned them the ire of the white power establishment, and so they went back and forth with one another. I read that, and I remembered Dad's role in that and his pushing to bring the brother to the city that he may be heard. I remember, Jared, when H. Rap Brown came into the living room of the house, of the apartment. Mm. Scary dude. He was very focused. I was a little boy. I've never seen black folks that focused, that serious, that dedicated. I remember the warmth and the ebullience of Stokely Carmichael, later to be known as Kwame Ture. Wonderful brothers and sisters that came in and out of our lives at that time. They were known as our father's friends, but we understood that they were on a mission, and we understood that that mission involved the freedom, justice, and equality of our people, and that's what we came to expect that everybody did. Everybody struggles. That's what we thought.
Wow. You know, and then, I mean, and then, and again, thanks to these documents, you know, it is funny. I mean, I once heard years ago Ward Churchill make this point. He said, you know, for whatever we want to say about J. Edgar Hoover, and of course, there's plenty to say, he was one of the greatest gatherers of data and surveillance the world had ever seen. And he said, you know, give the devil his due. He needed to be credited with that ability to stockpile this level of data on so many people. You know, so in some ways I am thankful because there are some things in here that I never knew, some details about our father's life that I never knew. And of course, to the extent that that what we got here is accurate, you know, you always have to be a little weary about what they want to make known. But it was still very interesting for me to read some of the things, and including this transition that is documented not only from CORE to SNCC, but from CORE to the Friends of SNCC to SNCC, in which there was a decision made to separate from whites and liberals who had been part of the Friends of SNCC as they developed a full-blown chapter of SNCC. And it was just, you know, it's very interesting even to read our godfather talking about, you know, in a very, you know, positive way, cordoning off the black community, calling it Blacksville, taking over control of the policing and all these kinds of things, issues that are still eerily irrelevant today. But anyway, that was one of the things that I thought was very interesting about the development of this and the delivery of these documents to us from folks doing research again on SNCC and CORE in Cincinnati.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I remember those events too. You asked about my you know, childhood recollections. And for the purpose of discussion, I'm the eldest sibling in our family. Jared is the youngest. We have a sister who's between us in age, and she's not able to be with us this morning. She was my junior, and so therefore she may not remember as many of these events as I do, but I'm telling you, when Godfather and Dad and the family of friends that they rolled with began to talk about these events, what struck me in looking at these documents, and you're exactly right about Hoover's information gathering capacity, when I look at these documents, what I see is that there was enough, they had to be spied on and looked into because they were doing things that are against the grain of what they want you to do. In other words, if you have an organization and you have some idealistic view of blacks having some faulty concept of freedom, that's okay. But when you start connecting with other organized entities to build a progressive and united black front, to address concerns of the oppressed, whether they black or otherwise, in every concern of life, then you become a dangerous presence, and you must be surveilled and spied upon. They mention in these documents, Jared, that Dad was a guest, I think in 1967, he had been a dais guest of the Nation of Islam at a regional rally that they had there in Cincinnati, Ohio. Now, we didn't know at that point in time that I would later be a member of the Nation of Islam and live some degree of prominence in this organization. They didn't know. But it was so interesting how it dovetails back. What did you think when you read about Dad giving seminars about education and the media? I mean, didn't that strike you as odd?
First of all, I had to laugh a little bit at the humility you shared there in describing your role in the Nation of Islam. I think a lot of people who know you will also share in a little bit of a laugh there. Knowing that I think you said something along the lines, some degree of prominence. I think many folks will know that it's a lot more than that. I'm just everywhere I go. Every time I meet somebody in the nation and I mention your name, you know, I get nothing but smiles and a lot of love out of that. So anyway, but you know, I mean, as you said, I mean, the trajectory, you know, they document that our father met with the Nation of Islam. You, of course, enter into the Nation of Islam, as did our sister, and as was your mother, or is your mother, I should say. You know, so I think that was interesting. And then, of course, the one thing that I did not know that I found most fascinating, one is you mentioned that there is documentation of our father giving lectures on black power and the politics of the press and the black press, which is, you know, I mean, it is remarkably shocking to see that is literally what I do professionally and otherwise, and in terms of just my general interest, this connection specifically between the politics and the perspectives of black power and use of the press and media, or black power as a method of media analysis. But the other thing that I didn't know, again, similar to these other trajectories that we've all taken, was that he was a member of the OAAU, and I of the Organization of Afro-American Unity. That part I had never heard and was fascinated by. So all these strands of the black radical traditions are connected through all of us. Oh, and then lastly, I should say that I never knew the exact date. I mean, thanks to the details of the FBI, the exact date that he came to D.C., which I believe they said was March 2nd, 1968.
That's
right. Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I never knew that, you know, that level of detail of that part of the story either. So, I mean, on those levels, it's fascinating, but also just to see, you know, and again, in the context of all this being discussed today with Edward Snowden and WikiLeaks and NSA surveillance, and it's something that I've tried to point out to folks entering the struggle, more recently on that basis, that this has a long history. And that if we ignore specifically the history of the counterintelligence program, which is now all of which is now perfectly legal under the Patriot Act, that we have to, I think it would better help us understand maybe how to respond today and to plan for the future. So when I read these documents about our father and our godfather and with that kind of specificity and connection personally, it is shocking. It's fascinating. And then I also wanted to say that it makes me proud. You know, like I'm proud
that
our father shows up in these documents in this way as somebody that they needed to be worried about.
You know? Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. The sense of pride in his establishment of the commitment to struggle in our DNA, in our family history, in the context of our family. And our father, as you know, Jared, was not the kind of man to be static at any point in his life. He was always thinking, always moving, always doing something different. And as he did those things, we who were his family, we sort of hung with him and moved with him through those different phases. And all of them come back to the fact that he fought for justice. He fought for freedom. He fought for equality. And those are things of which we can be justifiably proud. We can also be proud that he was an enemy of the wickedest people who ever stood astride the horizon of time. These folks are wicked, and the things they do would boggle the mind of the average person. Every day when you turn on the cable TV news, you learn of some new indiscretion. You learn that the NSA has been over in Mexico spying. They've been over in Britain or France, and even on the allies of the United States have experienced the brunt of America's intrusive nosiness in Brazil. They've had so many of different examples of that. But no, here in Black America, we live in the belly of this country. And so we experience the brunt of that kind of thing. Two things that are interesting, I'll go back to the other parts of the discussion. I noticed when you talk about the thoroughness of the details that they gathered. They couldn't have done that, Jared, without spies, Negroes who were Quislings, turncoats, Benedict Arnolds, people who gave the FBI every strand and smidgen of information that they could gather on their own people for just daring to want to be free. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's
they
deep.
Would go into, and you saw it in the documents, how they would say there were 13 people present at Pastor Hunt's church over at Caramel Presbyterian in Avondale in Cincinnati. And they would say that the 13 people gave an average of $2 apiece into the collection. They would talk about our father raising charity at public events. I got a bang out of that, too, because...
Exactly, because that's what you do.
That's what I do. And so it was just funny how this unfolded. I kept thinking, they had a Negro behind every tree, calling in on a tin can connected to a string. Massa, that Leonard Ball and Tom Porter over here got 13 folks right over here telling them that you ain't right, boss. Massa, they even told some more people in Cincinnati and Lincoln Heights, and then they went down to Alabama, Lowndes County. They came back, they talked to that other radical Negro, Stokely Carmichael, boss. I can see them old Tom biscuit-eating Negroes now. So that is amazing, you know, to watch that develop. And I want to also add another footnote on a brighter note that won't put such a bad taste in your mouth. You know that Godfather, Tom Porter, is who I'm referring to as our Godfather. He is that to us and has been throughout our lives. Yes, that's the same Tom Porter who is beloved and well-known as by the WPFW family, the Pacifica family, and the family in Washington, D.C. But one of the things that Godfather does is collect and catalog and serve as a music historian.
That's called
Staz, African American Classical Music. This is also something that was a great interest of our father. And I'm also noting around those dates, Jared, that those were the times that we were learning the significance of music and cultural expressions in our lives as a people and as a family. Mm. So we had a healthy appreciation for the creative process and the way that music, for example, was written and performed and its ability to serve as a fulcrum or even a booster rocket for the movement of our people into freedom. I remember, Jared, during these days that the actual SNCC chapter put on a performance of the drama, Douglas Turner Ward's drama, A Day of Absence, as a fundraiser for SNCC. So culture began to interplay in what they were doing, underlining this united black front. There, when you see them at Caramel Presbyterian Church, when you see them with Reverend Hunt, when you see them organizing to respond to the unfair arrest, conviction, and later execution of a Postil Lackey, a black man convicted in a very shady way of killing a white woman in Cincinnati in the 60s. You can imagine the stress and the racial tension that was inherent in that. It was just amazing to watch and read those documents and see the impact that our father and godfather had in those days. I mean, Dad definitely mixed what he liked back in those days.
No question. Well, Jamil Muhammad, thank you very much, man. I do want to just say a thanks to the researcher, Lawrence Rochelle, or I think it's pronounced Rochelle, who's an NYU grad student who sent me this, and we thank him for that as well. So thank you very much for joining me, Jamil Muhammad.
Thank you for having us. I really want to thank our sister, Sharifa Muhammad, who couldn't be with us this morning, but has also been an integral part of this family tradition that we're living out today. We also are very glad and grateful to our godfather, Thomas Porter, for the work that he continues to do to keep minds open and to keep hearts engaged in the protracted struggle for freedom, justice, and equality for a people who yearn to breathe free. And I'm moved to thank our mothers, you know, because without Arnett and May, we wouldn't be here, you know.
Right, that's true. No question. You're right. Absolutely.
Very, very grateful to moms, and we thank them for their love and support and backing of us as we've gone through this, and for their loving our father, because he was a difficult man, because he was always doing something. Always doing something. So I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for that. And look for this or some similar aspect of what we've done this morning in new editions of the Final Call News. It'll be out soon. We've been contacted by the editor of the Final Call, Brother Richard, who wants to share with the readership of that fine organ this interesting story of how the FBI and their policies and what they did affected one family. Did they ever promote and provoke things that Dad did or others did that affected our family down the line? We don't know yet, but we do know that we're committed and united, and we're standing like a solid wall, and we're going to fight until the last breath leaves us and leaves our children to establish freedom for our people. So that is what we're committed to, and we ain't no agents, and we ain't no damn spies. Mm. We're going to do the things that we have to do for freedom for our people. So I thank you for having had me on the program this morning as well.
I mix what I like. Second Childhood Production is for the Killer Bees podcast, and I mix what I like. .org. I mix what I like.